Hello everyone, this is Belinda from the podcast Michael Jesse and the Truth Podcast. Today's date is October the 7th, 2023, and it is episode 28, Karma, Explanations, and Reality. This episode will focus on karma, explanations, and reality. It looks like certain people that did Michael wrong are getting their karma. Taj and Prince Jackson explain things, but needs some clearing up. And singer Tank wants to call Michael a thief for the sake of proclaiming Michael's copycat, Chris Brown, as a great, quote-unquote great. The comedy writes itself, and it's time to examine why such a false allegation is laughable. The best way to listen to the podcast is Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. You can also listen to it on the website, Spotify website. Because now that Anchor that hosts the podcast is owned by Spotify, you can listen to it on there. The website is www.michaelandthetruthpodcast.blogspot.com. The best way to contact me is email, and the email is mjthetruthpodcast@outlook.com. Fair use statement: this site/podcast contains original content that may not be authorized for use by the creator. The podcaster is legally using original content under the fair use principles. And then there's a link to section 107 of the Copyright Act from the 1970s that you can read for yourself. And so we start. Karma. Oprah is feeling the heat. She thought that she was helping, but she was not. So as you know, you should know that Oprah is getting flamed for trying to ask people to donate money for a charity to help the poor people over in Maui, in Hawaii, or Maui, where she has a home in. And it's not looking too good. So this article from Yahoo Entertainment, or originally from the website Atlanta Black Star, gets into the way the horrible woman is getting flamed. So it states, Oprah Winfrey faces accusations of hiring firefighters to protect her massive estate during Maui wildfire after requesting donations for the displaced victims who lost their homes. Oprah Winfrey is being accused of doing everything she can to protect her Hawaii estate from the unprecedented wildfires that devastated the island of Maui in August. Multiple social media users have posted videos alleging that she hired a private team of firefighters to stop off the flames from damaging her 2,000-plus acre land. Not to mention, many are still outraged the former talk show host publicly visited shelters where the displaced residents sought refuge after losing their homes. The widely shared TikTok video claims that Winfrey hired the team before the fires even started, and that instead of taking some of that land and housing even a small portion of those displaced people, you hired a private security team to keep them off your land. Winfrey has been a part-time resident of Maui for more than 15 years. The video goes on to take aim at shady real estate deals that are targeting displaced residents. One ex-user alleges that those same deals helped the mogul purchase her massive plot of land for pennies on the dollar. You're so concerned about Maui that instead of taking what would amount to a year's salary for you and four or five of your billionaire friends, which could be used to rebuild the entire place in a matter of months, you're jumping on social media asking the American public, most of them can't afford to pay their rent right now, to do it for you. Continue the video. Winfrey long have been criticized for taking up land ownership in the tourist hotspot. In the wake of the recent devastation, locals called on her and other notable wealthy people to help with recovery efforts, along with purchasing items for the displaced. She also partnered with Dwayne The Rock Johnson to launch the People's Fund of Maui. The megastars donated $5 million each, but also asked the public to help out. The money reportedly will go directly to residents impacted by the fires, allowing them to have agency over their own needs. In a video, Winfrey said that Winfrey said each resident over the age of 18 will receive $1,200 a month for 6 months or until the relief fund is depleted. Still, critics have taken issue with the multimillionaire actor and the billionaire mogul asking everyone to donate. If you two don't take your Hollywood elite behinds to your other Hollywood elite friends and politician buddies that got millions like you do and help out Maui, you are out of your damn mind, said one woman. They could have they could have just give the money, give them the money. The donation would be raised. The donation would be to raise money for a corrupt case thinly veiled as a good one, commented another critic. Despite users suggesting that both celebrities disabled comments on Maui-related posts, users are still able to sign off beneath content both related and unrelated to the natural disasters. As shown on his post, shared on September 1st, Johnson traveled to Maui to speak with locals about the heartbreak they are enduring. The former WWE star is of Samoan descent and has familial ties to Hawaii, where his mother was born and raised. He also pledged to continue donating as the island rebuilds. On September 3rd, Winfrey shared an update regarding the fund, saying that 10,000 people already had donated, and thousands of residents signed up to receive the much-needed financial assistance. So, that is the article on Oprah and her ways. Sorry about that. And, you know, she's getting flamed for doing the stuff she's pulling. So, people on social media are letting her have it. And this is from her, what I'm reading is from her Instagram page. She made the post about her, people wanting to, this is the fund they have to donate. This is what people are saying. Billionaire asking for money from the poor. What a joke. You have billions. You could donate 100 million and still be as wealthy as before donating. You give the money. You are the village in Maui. Your billions can help your neighbors in Maui while your neighbors are suffering, and you have billions. You're asking others who barely making ends meet for money? The freaking nerve. Then another post, it's time to say goodbye to Oprah Winfrey one last time. Now, Oprah made a post like that way back in 2019, instead of Oprah's name was Michael Jackson's name, over some stuff we're going to leave in Neverland. Huh. Oprah and The Rock. Okay. Asking the middle class for donations is like a billionaire trying to find loose change in their couch cushions. Come on, folks. Give us your last pennies while we swim in our money vaults. Oprah Winfrey is a billionaire who owns 800 of Liana's 6,000 acres. Her property was miraculously spared entirely while 1,200 buildings, 2,000-plus acres burned, and countless people are missing or have died. Yet, instead of paying forward her good fortune like any normal human being, she's blaming y'all. And she's talking about this individual who made that post is talking on X. Is talking about the interview Oprah did with CBS This Morning. You know, her best friend, Gayle King, is a co-host of that morning show along with Nate Burleson and Tony Apocalypse. I apologize if I messed up his last name. But his first name is Tony. And she's there trying to make sense out of her getting attacked. And also she was gaslighting. And people were not happy when she did that. Then another person stated on X, when you are now she's quoting what Oprah said in that interview. When you are terrorized and vilified online, you have to know who you are. Oprah on people attacking her. Then this person reminded Oprah, welcome to hashtag Michael Jackson shoes and his family's shoes. They're not comfortable, are they? Karma, get used to it. Okay. So then someone stated on X, it's quite ironic how Oprah chose not to interview her close friend Weinstein, but instead targeted Michael Jackson after he was acquitted and wasn't allowed to defend himself, especially considering that the two losers she interviewed have previously lied under oath, and are currently suing the estate. And then I made a quote to respond to that. Yep, Oprah and those two bums are losers. Keep reminding people of her true ways while she wants to state that she's being attacked. Yet she attacked a deceased black man and his family over lies 4 years prior. Then someone said on X, developing, Oprah just explained how her and Dwayne The Rock Johnson used their $5 million to start up the People's Fund of Maui instead of donating $10 million, Oprah stated, and they go on to state what she stated. And then someone responded back, of course she didn't donate. She's a complete fraud, let alone the people she chooses to hang out with. Geffen, Weinstein, and those she promoted. Wilson, Safechuck, and those she smeared while her predatory extortionate buddies remain well protected. Of course. And then there's videos done by some done on YouTube that breaks down people's responses to the stunt Oprah pulled. So even Cindy Crawford has something to say about Oprah and her ways. And it's titled, Cindy Crawford says Oprah Winfrey treated her like chattel on her talk show. Supermodel Cindy Crawford accused Oprah Winfrey of objectifying her during a 1986 appearance on her show. I was like the chattel or a child, like to be seen and not heard, Crawford said in The Supermodels, an Apple TV Plus documentary series that premiered Wednesday. The first episode replayed an edited clip. Crawford's Oprah debut with modeling executive John Casablancas. Did she always have this body? Winfrey asked. Stand up just a moment. Now this is what I call a bod, Winfrey grudged as Crawford obliged. When you look at it through today's eyes, what Oprah was like, stand up and show me your body. Like, show us why you're worthy of being there, Crawford said. In the moment, I didn't realize it, she added. Only when I look back at it and I was like, oh my gosh. That was so not okay, really, especially from Oprah. Here's a fuller clip of the moment from decades ago, even cringier in context. If Crawford had any lingering hard feelings, they didn't show in this photo of her with Winfrey at a New York City event in 2001. Okay, and the HuffPost reached out to Oprah's rep for a comment, and of course, nothing. So it looks like Oprah is getting what's coming to her. You know, when you think about the shenanigans she pulled over the years with her talk show, using her, before her talk show, when she was on The Color Purple and she was defending it. A lot of people don't know that The Color Purple, and I used to like that movie, but I look at the movie differently now. The Color Purple was such a, you know, important movie, but it was also very, very, very controversial because it really made black men look horrible. And Oprah didn't see anything wrong with it because, you know, she has never really cared about black men. You know, she didn't see anything wrong doing that. And she's defending the movie. I mean, they're doing a remake of the movie that's coming out this year, I think in Christmas. And she's gonna keep on, you know, using that movie to paint that picture of her ultimate hatred, black men. Now people will say, well, she's with a black man right now, so she doesn't hate black men. Oh, she hates black men. Stedman is not the type of black man she's attacking because she can, you know, control him, I guess. You know, Stedman doesn't care what Oprah does to other black men. That's not his problem. So using that argument is BS to me. Oprah doesn't like the black community. Oprah doesn't like black men. Clearly, she hates Michael Jackson's guts. We'll talk a little about it later when I bring up Taj's interview with the MJ cast. But Karma's coming back to get Oprah. It is an article out now that talks about, it's from the BuzzFeed. If you hear that in the show, it was me drinking water bottle. Sorry about that. From BuzzFeed, where they're listing all of the off-putting stuff on Oprah and her ways from her talk show days. And there's a video on YouTube out right now that it talks about Oprah's ways and her controversy regarding the whole Maui situation. This person decided, okay, I'm going to go attack Oprah now. But when Oprah was attacking black people and black men particularly, this video didn't exist. People are now seeing that she's pretty much a crappy human being. Gayle King is doing work. Oh, I got to defend Oprah because they trash her again. This and that. Well, that's what they get. You know, when you sat there and you fall, okay, I'm going to go ahead and trash black men constantly. And you're not going to get that karma, especially when after a black person that is deceased and innocent, and after they told you it wasn't you, and you're still aiming at this guy, you're going to get what's coming to you, Oprah. And that's exactly what's happening. Another person getting a karma is Jan Wenner. Jan Wenner put his foot in his mouth. The founder of Rolling Stone was promoting his latest book when he stated something that explains all we need to know about him and that publication. Oh, stop it. You're telling me now. Before I get into what I'm about to read, Jan Wenner, of course, like I stated, is the founder of Rolling Stone, the magazine that we all love. And I say that sarcastically. We don't love the magazine, but we love it. No, I despise that magazine publication. He did a book called The Masters where he puts down white male rockers who he feel are better at articulating rock and roll music. He did an interview to promote his book to the New York Times, and when people read what he said, they went off on the socials. So let me read to you what he said in the interview, and then I'm going to read to you the responses, and it's crazy. Oh, stop it. You're telling me Joni Mitchell is not articulate enough on an intellectual level. Hold on a second. I'll let you rephrase that. All right, thank you. It's not that they're not creative geniuses. It's not that they're not inarticulate. Although, go have a deep conversation with Grace Slick or Janis Joplin. Please be my guest. You know, Joni was not a philosopher of rock and roll. She didn't, in my mind, meet that test. Not by her work, not by other interviews she did. The people I interviewed were the kind of philosophers of rock. A black artist, you know, Stevie Wonder, genius, right? I suppose when you use a word as broad as masters, the fault is using that word. Maybe Marvin Gaye or Curtis Mayfield. I mean, they just didn't articulate at that level. Interesting. How do you know if you didn't give them a chance? Because I read interviews with them. I listened to their music. I mean, look at what Pete Townshend was writing about, or Jagger, or any of them. They were deep things about a particular generation, a particular spirit, a particular attitude about rock and roll. Not that the others weren't, but these were the ones that could really articulate it. Carole King, Madonna, there are millions of examples. When I was referring to the zeitgeist, I was referring to black performers, not to the female performers, okay? Just to get that accurate. The selection was not a deliberate selection. It was kind of intuitive over the years. It just fell together that way. The people had to meet a couple of criteria, but it was just kind of my personal interest and love of them. And so far as the women, just none of them were as articulate enough on this intellectual level. Do you think that it is actually more to do with your own interest as a fan and a listener than anything particular to the artist? I think the problem is when you start saying things like they or these artists can't, really is a reflection of what you're interested in more than any ability or inability on the part of these artists, isn't it? That's why that was my number one thing. The selection was intuitive. It was what I was interested in. You know, just for the public relations sake, maybe I should have gone and found one black or one woman artist to include here that didn't measure up to the same historical standards, just to avert this kind of criticism, which I get. I had a chance to do that. Maybe I'm old-fashioned and I don't give a F or whatever. I wish in retrospect... Okay, sorry. Maybe I'm old-fashioned and I don't give a expensive or whatever. I wish in retrospect I could have interviewed Marvin Gaye. Maybe he had been the guy. Maybe Otis Redding, had he lived, would have been that guy. This is also a history will speak kind of question. There are 7 subjects in the new book, 7 white guys. In the introduction, you acknowledge that performers of color and women performers are just not in your zeitgeist, which to my mind is not plausible for Jan Wenner. Janis Joplin, Joni Mitchell, Stevie Nicks, Stevie Wonder, the list keeps going. Not in your zeitgeist? What do you think is the deeper explanation for why you interview the subjects you interviewed and not other subjects? And then he states, well, let me just, okay, what I read is not in order, but you get the point what this guy is saying. So if you are interested, the link to that interview is on the show notes. Now, after this nonsense he stated, he was getting flamed on social media. Let's read the comments. White men did not produce great art and literature. White men produce art and literature that spoke to other white men. So they are just collectively agreed amongst themselves that it was great. A lot of it ain't that great. To any readers of the Rolling Stone BS Top 100 list, this Caucasian's racist outlook are no surprise. F him and Rolling Stone magazine. Trash on top of trash. If he would have just said, these are seven of my buddies that happen to be rock stars, it would have been fine. Okay, write your book. But Jan can't help himself. He's convinced that he and his friends represent the correlation of pop culture and intellect. It's the hubris. It is so funny. Recently, Jan Wenner, he's not a winner, okay, made a preposterous claim on the Howard Stern show that Rolling Stone was the place where hip-hop journalism flourished. It made me furious because it's a bold-faced lie. The lack of hip-hop coverage in Rolling Stone is the reason we started The Source. F you, Wenner. Facts upon facts. I remember, you know, when I was really into, like, I was really into magazines when I was, like, a teenager. And I was familiar with Rolling Stone. I even brought some Rolling Stone issues because I was a big fan of NSYNC. So, they were on the cover. And, you know, Rolling Stone is, like, a big magazine. So, they were on the cover, and I was, like, interested in that. But I never remember seeing Boyz II Men on the cover, or TLC, or, you know, I don't remember seeing them on the cover in their height of their careers. And they were breaking records, like crazy records on the Billboard charts. And they only put certain people on the covers of Black origin who they felt was really doing stuff for pop culture. Not because they were actually breaking records. I think they put them on the cover because white people listen to them. I'm just going to be honest. So, you know, for Jan Wenner to say that about what their magazine did for hip-hop, when we know that's not true, is laughable. I mean, when you think about it, maybe Tupac was on the cover when he was alive. He definitely was on after he died. And same with Biggie. I mean, I don't know if Biggie or Tupac on the cover when they were living. But we know that Rolling Stone really wasn't caring about them then, right? I mean, Caucasity 101. Jan Wenner, the founder of Rolling Stone and co-founder of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, said that he only interviewed white men for his book, The Masters, because his estimation there were no black artists who were intellectually articulate as philosophers of rock. He interviewed Bono, Bob Dylan, the late Jerry Garcia, Mick Jagger, the late John Lennon, Bruce Springsteen, and Pete Townsend. Let's be clear, the first rock and roll record was the 1951 song Rocket 88, recorded by Ike Turner's band, the Kings of Rhythm, and the architects of the genre were black artists. Little Richard, Fats Domino, Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley, Sister Rosetta Tharp, and others. Like so many other things, white folks stole the intellectual properties of black artists, claimed ownership, and rewrote history to give themselves credit. Remember, the origin of Rolling Stone magazine's name is from a song from a foundational black American artist, Muddy Waters. Jan Wenner was never a journalist, just a highlighter of culture he deemed worthy. His misogyny / racism are a byproduct of him wanting to be the subject of the myth-making he spent his life supporting. He's just a PR flack. Best to ignore him. This isn't surprising. Jan Wenner has always viewed black artists as less than. Sure, they were in and on some covers of Rolling Stone, but that was only to profit him. He never cared otherwise. Rolling Stone gets it wrong again. Howling Wolf, Sisters Rosetta Tharpe, B.B. King, Bo Diddley, Chuck Berry, Little Richard, James Brown, Michael Jackson, Prince, Rick James, George Clinton, Bootsy Collins, Larry Graham. None of them were philosophers capable of articulating themselves. As far as Prince and Rolling Stone, Prince in 1998 asked to get a cover, and their response was, "Prince, you're not 25 and hot anymore, and you cater mostly to an R&B black audience now. I never liked Rolling Stone. You embody phony white liberalism to the defect." Rolling Stone liked cutting edge blacks like Prince, Rodman, or even Tupac when they were hot. You know, they get down. Now, we all know that Jan Winner did not put Michael on the cover of Rolling Stone in 1979 when Michael was breaking records. Rolling Off the Wall was pretty much at that time the biggest album of that year. So this is the letter that Jan Winner sent to, Michael's people back in 1979. "Dear Norman, Michael Jackson has in fact been on the cover of Rolling Stone, contrary to your statement in your recent letter to me. We would very much like to do a major piece on Michael Jackson, but feel it's not a cover story. So, there you go. But, you know what? Well, you know what they felt was a cover story? When, in 1987... when Michael's about to release the Bad album, Rolling Stone decided, "Yeah, we're gonna go ahead and put you on the cover. While we trash your album, say your music is garbage, and on the cover of the magazine, we make you look like an animal. Whether you're Mickey Mouse, or a dog, or a monkey, we're gonna do that. Not a human being. And that's not racist." Okay. Then, I saw this post, and I decided I'm gonna add it here because I felt like this relates to the nonsense I'm reading regarding this stupid man, Winner. "The trigger of white rage inevitably is black advancement. It's not that the mere presence of black people that is the problem. Rather, it's the blackness with ambition, with drive, with purpose, with aspirations, and with demands for full and equal citizenship. It is blackness that refuses to accept subjugation, to give up a formidable array of policy assault and legal contortions, has consistently punished black resilience, black resolve. Carol Anderson, White Rage, the Unspoken Truth of Our Racial Divide." Rolling Stone released a statement. Let's laugh. "John Winner's recent statement to the New York Times do not represent the values and practices of today's Rolling Stone. Jan Winner has not been directly involved in our operations since 2019. Our purpose, especially since his departure, has been to tell stories that reflect the diversity of voices and experiences that shape our world. At Rolling Stone's core is the understanding that music above all brings us together, not divide us." Okay, Rolling Stone, that's a hilarious comment considering that y'all still do what Jan Winner does with Michael Jackson. Those stupid lists, interviewing his liars, going ahead and promoting that stupid movie, yeah, all in 2009. Who are you fooling, Rolling Stone? And then on my show notes, I post a video of someone breaking down this man's stupid comments. An article that was done by the Griot, written by Matthew Allen, talks about what in deep conversation of how, I'm sorry, I can't see they won't let me see the title of the article. It's cold. Jan Winner's Rolling Stone and the Irony of Black Musical Articulation. So this article from the Geo breaks down how stupid this man's quote is, and it's a must read when you get a chance to read it. Okay. And also, Jan Winner is a creep. For real, he's a creep. And then an update. Rolling Stone found that Jan Winner's book dropped below 3,500 on Amazon. All promotional events canceled in light of controversy over comments. Jan Winner has canceled all promotional events for his book, The Masters. A notice went out from the 92nd Street Y this evening. Canceled Winner's planned Q&A with Cameron Crowe set for October 18th. Crowe made his career at Rolling Stone in 1970. See the movie Almost Famous. It's a stunning turn of events for Winner, whose entire legacy has been destroyed in 1 week by his comments in the New York Times last week. He said that female and black performers were too inarticulate to be interviewed, and he wasn't interested in them anyway. So that's even people in the media getting what's coming to them. And you know. they think they can continue to do this to people. You know, you're seeing these people breaking down. And it's only a matter of time. Okay? So, another person that's getting his karma, is comedian Russell Brand. So, he is being accused of essay from four different women. It got so bad, the accusations, that Paramount Plus removes Russell Brand's comedy special after these allegations. The streaming service follows YouTube and the BBC in distancing itself from the comedian, who has been accused by four women of sexual assault. Essay. He denies the allegations. Okay. Paramount Plus has removed one of Russell Brand's stand-up comedy specials after several women accused him of essay, according to a source with knowledge of the situation. Russell Brand in New York City was available on streaming on the streaming platform as of Tuesday morning, according to screenshots taken by NBC News. It was not immediately clear when the one-hour special was taken down Tuesday. The source did not provide any additional comment. Live in New York City was released in 2009, a year after Brand's breakout Hollywood film role in the romantic comedy Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Brand's most recent stand-up comedy special, Russell Brand Rebirth, remains available on Netflix. Netflix did not immediately respond to an email Tuesday requesting a comment on the status of Rebirth. Paramount is the latest organization to distance itself from Brand, who has denied the essay allegations. He has not been charged with any criminal offenses. YouTube confirmed earlier Tuesday that Brand will no longer make money from his channel on the video platform, saying in part that monetization of his account has been suspended following serious allegations against the creator. The BBC, meanwhile, said it removed some content featuring Russell from its streaming platform iPlayer and BBC Sounds after it assessed that it now falls below public expectations. Brand's management agency, Travis Stock Wood, terminated all professional ties to him, saying in a statement, Russell Brand categorically and vehemently denied the allegations made in 2020, but we now believe we were horribly misled by him. The Times of London and the Sunday Times of London, in partnership with the British current affairs TV show Dispatches, published a joint investigation study in which four women accused Brand of essay, including one allegation of the R word. He was also accused of flashing his to a fifth woman. The accusers have not been named or publicly identified themselves. They include one woman who alleges that Brand sexually essayed her during a relationship with him when she was 16. In the late 2000s, Brand rose to fame in the U.S. thanks in part to his roles in high-profile comedies Forgetting Sarah Marshall and Get Him to the Greek. The movies were distributed by U.S. Universal Pictures, a unit of NBC Universal, the parent company NBC News. In recent years, Brand has largely stepped away from Hollywood and cultivated a wide following as a political pundit known for his right-leaning and contrarian views. Okay, Brand's account on YouTube has 6.6 million followers and also hosts a show on Rumble, a video service popular with conservative commentators. So that is the article. So Russell Brand, during the Leaving Neverland nonsense, went on his comedy nonsense and attacked Michael over stuff that didn't happen. Now that he's accused, he's accused of some stuff. He wants everybody to give him that same grace instead of proving guilty. And this is how I see it. Nope. You're going to get what's coming to you. I personally believe he did it. I always believe people who attack Michael are hiding something. And Michael, is a reflection of good. And they are a reflection of trash. And the man is trash. And the hypocrisy of it all. Loving all these cautious blue ticks post calling for evidence before condemning hashtag Russell Brand. All the same people who threw hashtag Michael Jackson to the lions, including Brand himself. It's almost like race plays a role. It does. So, like I always say with these three idiots, karma has no expiration date. You're going to get what's coming to you. And it's a reminder. Keep going. Keep going there with people. You're going to get what's coming to you. So the next topic is explanation. Todd, Michael's nephew, and Prince, Michael's son, decided to do interviews. Todd did an interview with MJ Cass. Michael's son, Prince, did an interview with Mike Tyson's podcast. Yes, Mike Tyson, a boxer, he has a podcast. So he did an interview with him. So let's get into what Todd said in the MJ Cass interview. Basically, it's interesting. He talked about his docuseries. He talked about the biopic. He talks about Leaving Neverland 2 and the Liars and all that. He talks about his issues with the fans and some little family updates and among other things. He also talked about the strikes that are going on. Let's start with what's going on with the docuseries. All right, so basically he said that he was going to release the docuseries this year. But because of not the strikes, but because he knows that the Thriller documentary is coming out this month. October is Halloween month. He will not release the first episode of the docuseries. Okay. There's no promotion right now that I know of any Thriller documentary. Because if it's coming out this month, the promotion should have been out there. But there's no promotion. That doesn't mean that what Todd is saying is not true. There's just no promotion. So that's. Now, with the docuseries, he also mentioned that the writer's strike is resolved. But the actor strike is not. At the time he did the interview, both strikes were going on. So when you listen to the interview, he's talking about the writer strike and the actor strike. But now currently it's the actor strike. That does not affect his documentary because his documentary has nothing to do with writers or actors. Now if they did a director strike, yes, it would affect him because he's planning to join the union because he's directing a documentary. So the documentary is not affected by the writer strike or the actor strike, but the biopic is now bothered by the actor strike because the writer strike is over. And the actor strike, there's no agreement yet, so with the biopic, it's going to be delayed. Now, Todd talks about that he has friends who are also writers and actors, and how is it point is kind of reminded of the music industry a little bit. Okay, fine. Basically, I'm not going to, like, break it down. This is what he said about the biopic. This is what he said about the docuseries. This is what he said about, because I'm just going to tell you by memory. I will be kind of, like, all over the place, but it's, like, the interview is almost 2 hours. So, my suggestion is to listen. I posted the link of the interview. Listen to the podcast episode yourself to get that. There are going to be some things I'm missing out on, but understand that, you know, I'm not reacting to every single thing he's saying. I'm reacting to what I feel is important. So, it's a little bit of a docuseries. He basically said that it's coming along. He pretty much done the first episode, it looks like. They did, meaning the people involved in the docuseries wrote, signed a non-disclosure agreement. So, by law, they can't say anything. Now, Charles is part of the docuseries who interviewed Taj in the episode. So, he cannot say anything. And the questions that he's asked about the docuseries, he can't answer them. But Todd can because he's not under the NDA. So that gets you thinking, okay, if you're not under the NDA, you could tell us something. Even in the interview, he really didn't say anything at all. If you notice, he posted two updates recently. One this morning. And another one, sometime this past week, their pictures, rare pictures of Michael during the Dangerous era when he was going on tour. And I'm like, okay, we don't want to see pictures. Like, can you give us a trailer? If you, in a way, imply you're done with the first episode, can you do at least a trailer? So we can see how this is going to look. Like, by the way, if you are listening to me and you hear some noise in the background, they're watching the college ball game. So just try to ignore that noise. If you hear it, they're yelling because the game is on. But anyway, I'm going to try to speak louder so you can understand what I'm saying. So basically, you can release something. You're not bound by the agreement by law. So you can at least, you can state, you can release something. He did allude there's some surprise going on, but he wouldn't get into it because he doesn't want to spoil it. I don't know. Maybe I'm expecting too much. That's what it is. Maybe I'm expecting too much from Taj. I'm expecting because he's a Jackson. You're supposed to like, but he's not, you know, give us what we want. But he's not Michael. That's what I got to keep in mind. Now, he said that he's trying to make this docuseries the best he can because it's his uncle and his uncle deserves the best. I agree with him. But I just feel like, I don't know, when I listen to him talk about this docuseries, I am getting like this, I don't know, how can I put it? I'm getting this thing from him where it's like, he's confident about it, but he's trying not to say too much. That almost sounds like he's not all that confident. That's what it gives off. That's what it's perceived as. Like, he's confident, but he's not fully confident because he's not telling us everything. I just feel like when he's focusing on what that fool Dan Reed is doing with the Leaving Neverland 2, like he said, he's not doing live feeds anymore because he doesn't want it to be used against him for Leaving Neverland 2. I see both sides to this. I understand that because, I mean, Dan Reed has nothing. I mean, the two men are liars. I mean, all they're going to use is some random fans rambling against him to make it seem like the estate paid these people to say these things about him when no fan is paid by the estate. All the accounts online are done by actual people. Remember, Dan Reed had to create a burner account. Remember? He had to create a burner account to attack Michael. This is how low this guy is. And we figured out it was him. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if some of these hating accounts were him. I mean, he has nothing. I mean, when you have nothing, you're going to do silly stuff like that. So, you know, anyway. So he is trying not to, like, being Taj is trying not to, like, be used against, being used to attack, be used to attack certain people and stuff like that. So, that's why I think that, Taj is saying the stuff he's saying. Okay, so, I'm sorry, I'm doing something quick. I'm writing a text. Something. I'm sorry. Something came up. Okay. Sorry, everyone. I'm kind of getting distracted right now. So, like I was saying, you heard something in the back, but you're not hearing things. But just ignore it. So, you know, I think that's what Taj is trying to prevent. So, okay, I see two sides to that, but I will say that deep down regarding the docuseries, I think we should stop expecting Taj to always give us what we want regarding the docuseries. It is what it is. First, he said that he did this stuff to counterattack the two liars of Leaving Neverland. Now he's saying, I'm not doing it just because of that. At this point, I don't know what he was trying to do with this docuseries. I always said, if they don't talk about Michael as a man, if they don't show that he had girlfriends, if they don't show that he was a regular person, I don't see the point of docuseries. But I don't know, I have this feeling that Taj is going to promote Michael as Mickey Mouse. And I just, or Peter Pan. I hate to say this, but I really do believe he is. Because, I mean, for example, he's going to have Stephanie Mills on here. And Stephanie Mills openly made it clear she doesn't think Michael wanted to be a black person because of a skin disorder. She doesn't even think it exists. But is Taj going to get rid of her ignorant self? And no. But so, you know, I don't know. I don't think Taj is going to promote Michael as a regular person. I think he's going to promote him like he's Mickey Mouse or Peter Pan. I have that feeling. And that's okay. So I guess I like Mickey Mouse. So. And so then he talks about the biopic. So that's it with the docuseries. He talks about the biopic, and he said that basically, he said Jafar was a good match, but he wasn't convinced that he could do it until he saw the, screenplay? Or not screenplay, he saw the tape of Jafar practicing to be his dad for the movie. Uncle for the movie. And he said he was convinced. Even his father, Tito, said it's pretty good. So, you know, I don't know. He said that Graham King has been working on the movie, you know, the writing of the movie for, Graham King is the producer for the biopic for 3 years. And an interesting thing he said in the interview, he said that Graham King knew the Jacksons since the 1970s, and that includes Michael. So remember, if you remember a while back, John Branca on his on IG. Now, some people say follow him on TikTok, but I don't follow John Branca on social media. But, you know, I find out on Instagram. So, and I'm not going to follow John Branca ever on social media. That's not going to happen. But John Branca, said on there that he had to, they had to educate him, meaning Graham King, on Michael's innocence. So that bothered me when I heard that. I said, okay, well, that's not good. Now, when Todd is saying that the man has known his family since the 1970s, I would think that if, since you knew this man since the 1970s, that you wouldn't think he would be capable of doing these things. Now, people might say, well, you never know with people. I say, well, with people who really know Michael, they know Michael. They know he's not that kind of dude. So, I would think Graham would know, too. But once Graham started to, you know, really learn about these ridiculous allegations, he pretty much said that Graham King is only hiring crew members that believe in Michael's innocence and are passionate about getting the story out. So, is that a realistic thing? Probably. And it's probably true. He's, the people he's hiring probably have to probably do believe that, you know, Michael was framed. I think that's a good thing, you know, but it's Hollyweird. They're suspect. You know, so I don't know, y'all. I'm having, like, I'm kind of worried about the biopic, because I'm going to tell you, like I said this in previous episodes, the biopic is going to do very well. And recently, recent news, they're going to distribute the movie worldwide. Universal will distribute the movie worldwide. So, it's not going to be distributed by Sony Pictures. It'll be distributed by Universal. I don't even know how that's going to work with the music, but we'll see. But I decided I'm going to go see the movie. I'm going to see the movie to see how they're going to do it. I'm expecting foolery, but it is what it is. I'm going to see the movie not because I'm a fan. I'm going to see the movie because I want to know what they're going to put in this movie. For certainty. I think that the movie would do extremely well. I think that Jafar will be used. Will be not used, I should say. He is going to, in a way, replace Michael. Some people are going to see Michael as a myth, as this person that existed at one point. And then it will morph into, like, what they wanted Michael to be if he didn't have the skin disorder, if he didn't, if he only did the off-the-wall album and music that sounded like the off-the-wall album. If he didn't, like, he became that big star, but he didn't do the music he did. Or he didn't become the person he became. I think if you're really in deep with being an MJ fan, you get where I'm coming from. You look at Jafar, and he's the only Jackson in that family that resembles Michael. He has the height. He's growing out his hair. And he looks a lot like Michael. He sings, he dances. Does he act? I don't know. But, you know, there was a disconnect between Michael and old head black, the old heads in the black community would tell you. There was a disconnect between Michael and them. They love him. I do believe they do. But I think it's a lot about looks. When you look at someone like Beyonce, you know, why does so many in the black community love her so much? It's because she never was disconnected by them. They always, like, you know, she stayed in her community, even though she became the megastar that she became and all that. But Michael, once, you know, I think once Michael's skin color was changing, I think certain people were like, he got so big that he started to, like, stay away from his blackness. However, he always maintained his people. But yet, there are some people that think he has removed himself from the community, though he never did. Whereas Beyonce, yes, talk about black issues, but isn't really connected to the community like that. You know, it's kind of complicated. But people will see Jafar the way they felt Michael should have still looked like if he did not have the issues with the skin color. And so that alone will make people say, you know what? I like this version of Michael way better than the version of Michael that God said, God believes Michael should look like. Because that's the version they like. So I think, in my theory, I think they're going to try to, in a twisted way, replace Michael with his nephew. Because of so many things besides his looks and all that, his singing and all that, that he also is in the entertainment business. He's singing songs, mostly R&B songs, and people like to hear that. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, R&B is a great genre. But how he's starting off in his career, he's playing a megastar who happens to be his own uncle, who was a worldwide mega superstar, who is now an historical figure. And he has big shoes to fill. And it's unfair to him to have his own career where he can do his own music. He's going to be, in a way, typecast. And that will be the damage that will damage him in some way. He's going to be connected to his uncle permanently with this movie, especially when this movie do well. And I hope you guys understand where I'm coming from. I'm not trying to say that this is just, I don't even want to say it's a black community. I think it's everybody. I think all races, deep down, there are some people in all races that do like Michael the way he used, you know, the way he looked and how his music was that way until he started to grow as an artist and did things differently. You know what I'm saying? So I think that is what it is really. Now, to be fair, there are some people that, like myself, that don't care that he did that as an entertainer, because I believe in growth. I believe in evolution and growing with your music and progressing. I feel that's what he was doing, and his disorder happens. He didn't want this. He didn't want to look like that. We'll talk a little bit about that when I get into Prince's interview with Mike Tyson. So, I don't want to talk off tangent, but back to, oh God, I'm sorry everybody with the yelling because of the, it's the yelling with the football game. So, you know what I'm saying? So, I'm going to over talk because they're yelling right now. So, I want to, you know, I don't want to, like, be off topic regarding the movie. That's what my fear is. Because I do believe this movie is going to do extremely, extremely well. And it's going to be those think pieces. It's going to be those articles. It's going to be, this is what Michael should have been type articles. I hate to say it. It's going to happen. So if you fans disagree, I hope you do. But it's going to happen. So I say get ready for the craziness. Because it's going to happen. It's going to be the negative articles. It's going to be the he should have done this articles. It's going to be that. And, you know, Jermaine is Jafar's manager. So Jermaine was obsessed with trying to do stuff for Michael. If you read my blog over 10 years ago, I did a review of Jermaine's book, and in his book, he was trying to do some business move behind Michael's back. And, you know, that was unnecessary. I mean, there's no reason for that. So we all know, we should have an idea that now that since Jermaine could not be what Michael became, he could live vicariously through his son. And his son playing him. So, you know, Jermaine will be all over this life. He actually, he is working with Graham King, along with his brothers, Marlon, Jackie, and Tito, for this movie. As a matter of fact, they did an interview. And I talked about this on this podcast. They did an interview talking about their writing a movie about their lives, but it's really the biopic for Michael. So they're involved. The entire family is supporting this biopic. And there is nothing that none of us can do that are against the biopic can do about it. It's happening. It's going to happen. And that's it. One more thing. One thing I want to also mention. It was regarding the biopic, and I just had it, and now I forgot it. Wow. Because it was something Todd said. Yes, the estate. It's not about the biopic, but the family's relationship with the estate was strained. We all know, if you read my blog, last decade, I broke it down. Todd said they're in a good place. So there you go. The idea of the estate fighting Jackson's again is pretty much in the past. It's over with. They're in a good place. Prince is 100% involved in the... He's actually working with Graham King regarding the movie, the biopic. So, you know, that's mostly of what Todd is saying to Charles about a lot of things. The biopic, the docuseries, the two liars still running around with their nonsense. That he's going to release the docuseries around the time after Thriller documentary, probably after that, or before or during the upcoming Useless trial, because of the strike, the movie biopic will be moved back to sometime 2024 if they're still not on strike. So now, by the way, Todd did the interview with Charles Thompson, and it makes you wonder, why would Todd speak to a person who has such disdain for Michael that he cannot hide it? Now, on the MJ Cash X account, sometimes who types it, their initials or their first name would be mentioned after they made a post. So I saw some posts that Charles typed about Michael, and I'm going to read to you what he said. I'm going to read to you what he said. So he says, he clearly either had absolutely no idea this was being filmed or consented when not Sound of Mind. The angle is so unflattering. It's inconceivable he would allow this if clear-headed. I suspect the former. The interviewer's sleeve keeps intruding. Suggests a hidden cam. Okay, I think he's referring to the interview Michael did with Brett Ratner. Okay, back in 2003, that was leaked after he passed away. The real issue with Invincible is that Michael was totally disengaged from the creative process, hardly showing up at the studio, distracted, compromised, and essentially just buying in the majority of the songs, hence the huge disconnect between him and the music at the time. His appearance is part of it, but so are the interviews he's given, the speeches he's given, the information which had been made public about the reality of his private life. MJ was a very mysterious figure per 1993, onto whom people could project their own assumptions or hopes. By 2001, the public had seen and heard a lot more about him, and absolutely none of it was remotely compatible with him being any sort of Lothario. You know, that's unfortunate. You know, people like Charles is the problem in the fan community, but, you know, that's on them. They want to speak to that guy. That's on them. I stated this in my previous podcast episodes when I'm talking about this particular podcast. MJ Cast. You listen to the interviews. I mean, there's some good interviews, but I remember when I found out Charles was going to do, going to be part of the MJ Cast, and I literally told these people not to put him on there because he is not a good, he's not a Michael Jackson fan, and they did not care what I had to say. So, I guess, whatever. Prince then interviewed Mike Tyson and DJ Wu Kid, and it was good until it got, it became blah. So, you know, Prince Jackson, Michael's eldest son, did an interview with Mike Tyson and DJ Wu Kid. I wish I could like the interview. I don't care for it now. I think after watching this interview, I realized that Michael's children, I don't think we need to rely on them when it comes to the legacy anymore. I think the true Michael Jackson legacy is the music. After this young man's interview and his sister's ridiculous nonsense, I talked about that in the previous episode. I think it's time to, the idea of, when it comes to Michael, the idea of heirs running the legacy, it needs to, it's not going to be for Michael. I don't think it's needed. The music is so popular and powerful that that's enough, really. It's a shame, but when you listen to this young man speak, and he speaks very well, he doesn't really know his dad. He knows him as his father. He doesn't really know him enough to say things. And one point I'm going to make is what he said about the skin disorder. Now, before we get into it, Mike Tyson said to him, they talked about the skin disorder, and we all know that Michael had vitiligo. He told this story to Oprah and Snooze, and that part of the interview went viral. Why? I don't know. So, Mike Tyson claimed that Michael told him that why his skin looked the way it looked was because he wanted to glow, and he wanted to include everybody in, he wanted to represent everybody, so he decided to have, like, you know, have this thing happen to his body and glow. Something connected to that. And I thought that was ridiculous because Michael's music brings people together. He didn't need to change his skin to do that. He didn't change his skin. He had a skin disorder. And that was what Mike Tyson said was very disrespectful. It was very, very disrespectful. I personally don't think Michael ever told him that. I think Mike Tyson never asked him. I think Mike Tyson just made it up. And that's just my personal opinion. Just like I believe that DJ Wu Kid made up this story that Michael didn't know who Shakira was. I'm sorry, I'm not buying that. Simply because Michael owned publishing rights, he would have to know who the artist is. I can't see someone like Michael Jackson not know who these artists were. It doesn't make sense because Shakira, he said Shakira was on a TV, was on some show there when he was visiting, he was there at Bahrain when Michael was there back in the 2000s, and Michael was like, who's that woman? And DJ Wu Kid claims that it was Shakira. He claims this actually happened, and Michael's like, he didn't know who she was. Like I said, I thought to myself, I've always thought, he said this story before years ago, I always thought that story was a lie, just like the story he said that he saw Michael there just wearing he was there chilling wearing shorts. I don't believe that ever happened. Michael had vitiligo, he was not wearing shorts. And Michael never wore shorts. As sunny as Bahrain is, I doubt Michael would ever show out his legs like that. So I don't believe for a second that any of these people are telling the truth. I don't care. But, you know, the vitiligo claim was disrespectful and ignorant. So his son tells a story about, not the story, he tells that his father had vitiligo and he had lupus. And he said that the vitiligo, this is not funny, the vitiligo was caused by his lupus. No. These two things don't connect. The vitiligo was something he had since birth. But it became obvious during the Thriller era. In Michael's case, it started to show during the Thriller era. The lupus came in the 80s. Okay. It's not connected. So he was diagnosed with lupus in the 80s. Even that's a little, because it's not really mentioned in his autopsy, but the vitiligo is. Now, this is the problem. He doesn't bring up that he himself, Prince himself, also has vitiligo. So I'm going to read to you what Joe Jackson, his grandfather, Michael's father, said about it. Everybody's trying to make a big thing out of it. They say he tried to paint himself white. Himself white. That's not true. Michael got vitiligo. We saw it coming on him at an early age. You know, just a little spot. My aunt had the same thing. So, meaning Joe Jackson's own aunt had the same disorder. So, it came on his side of the family. Not Michael's aunt. No. Joe Jackson's aunt. So, Michael's grand aunt had it. And in the side of his family, of course. So, it skipped him. Went to Michael. Jermaine, according to Taj, Jermaine has it. And then Taj has part of it in his armpits. And Prince has it. But Prince did not mention that in the interview, which would help him, because that would prove, or without a doubt, that Michael is his father. So, because vitiligo is hereditary. Can be, and in Michael's case, is hereditary, because I just broke it down to you, that it runs in his side, his father's side of the family. So, you would think, Prince, come on now, you can say this. Nah. Then, I went on this website called La Cienega Smiles, WordPress.com. It's a blog where it also is all about. It's a blog that heavily needs to be updated because some things have changed. And I saw both of these on the comment section. So when you read the show notes, you will see that both of these links, both of these images were from the comment section on that blog. A person, a flight attendant, on that same website, posted on the comment section about this situation regarding Prince and their looks and all that. I have to reply. I'm a flight attendant for a major carrier. On July 1st, 2010, sorry, I had Prince Michael, Paris Blanket, Jafar, and Jamadice Jackson on my working flight from Los Angeles to Orlando, all sitting in first class. Oh yeah, with about 4 bodyguards. They were kind, polite, shy kids that didn't require attention. I really got a really good look at Michael's kids. I have to say, they are biracial. I think when silly Martin Bashir asked Michael about the race of Blanket's mom, MJ said she was black. I can truly say I believe it. I think Blanket's biological mom is Persian or Arab. He's so adorable. Prince Michael and Paris are very light with color, but not pale white. Also, I almost fainted when I saw white blotches / spots on Prince Michael's left hand. I think he has vitiligo. They look biracial. Prince Michael really do look like his great-grandfather Samuel. So, bingo. Now, in that same website, they did have other people that say, you know, Prince have vitiligo. But notice who's saying it. People who are not credible. So, I decided not to use them. And use just happenstance to saw those quotes, and I say I'm going to use that because they come from some type of credibility. So, also in the interview, Prince mentioned that Macaulay Culkin is the godfather to his sister Paris. His godfather is Marlon Brando, and their godmother is Prince and Paris's godmother is Elizabeth Taylor. Now, or was Elizabeth Taylor? She's not alive anymore. His godfather, of course, was Marlon Brando. So. Blanket's godparents is a mystery. We don't know who the godparents are. He also said his father was a terrific dad. Okay, he said that he always thought that Minister Louis Farrakhan's name was Shaka Fatah or Shaka Khan. I'm sorry, was Shaka Khan when he was a kid. I don't know where you got Farrakhan, Shaka Khan from. Maybe Khan. I don't know, but that's what he thought as a kid. Minister Farrakhan's name was Shaka Fatah. I mean, why keep saying Shaka Fatah? I mean, say Shaka Khan. But another thing that bothered me about the interview was when he talked about his upbringing. And, you know, he keeps dwelling on it wasn't a normal upbringing. It was like living in Neverland was like living in Disney World. Like, Neverland was a home. You had an amusement park in your house. It was a home. Okay, but you also travel over the world. A lot of people can't say they went, they did that. So I posted two articles that broke down his upbringing. We're going to talk about that in the near future, in near episodes of the Jackson family. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. We're also going to talk about the paternity. We got to talk about that because during his interview, people bringing up the bill. It's a lot. We got a lot to talk about. So the fraternity thing is going. We're going to break that down very, very well. I'm going to do it in a way where I'm not going to. It's not what you think. I have my opinions about it, and I will tell you what I truly think when I do that episode when I talk about the whole Jackson family, because it's a lot to uncover. Okay, so that is it. I think Michael's kid is going to have to do something about this situation with their with their father's legacy. Do a better job accepting that's your upbringing, that's what happened. You don't need to be trying to make it seem like your upbringing was weird. It wasn't. It worked for you. Look, you're a decent human being because of it. You're a good guy. Michael's kids are good people. It's just that, in my opinion, they could do way more. But unfortunately, there are family members that saw opportunity and encourage his kids to do some foolery. I don't know if I want to say foolery. I mean, they have a job, but it's not the kind of job we think his kids should be doing. But I guess it could be worse. But I don't know, y'all. I mean, deep down, I don't want Michael's kids in entertainment business, but they're in entertainment business. And there's really nothing I could do about that, you know? If I could do something, I would. But there's nothing. Once certain family members, and I will talk about this also in the Jackson family podcast episode I'm doing. Once certain family members took over, sorry about this, y'all, the noise, I apologize. Once Jackson family members took over, the ones that had no business to take care of his kids, but that's another story. The idea of Michael, children running and doing, handling his legacy went with Michael. Okay? Alright. The next and last topic is reality. So, you know, there's certain people, no matter what, they can never accept things for what they are. You can to explain it to them, hey man, accept this reality and move on. You can break it down to them, but some people, as they would say, are stuck in their ways. So I saw this nonsense on X that somebody screen captured from Instagram from the singer Tank. Tank is an R&B singer who is now retired from the music business, who decided at one point, before he got started in the industry, he was the backup singer for the late Aaliyah. So, and he's an R&B singer on his own right. He has some hit songs. Okay. But he's retired because he can't do what he used to do. You know, he ain't popping no more. So, unfortunately, he goes and say nonsense on social media. And people who don't have an idea of history, because why not? They don't do research. They don't read. Support what he's saying. So, let's read the foolery. This is what he said. Chris is a better dancer because dancing has evolved, and Chris is a product of that evolution. MJ stole a lot of ish and perfected it, which we have to give him credit for. But Chris Brown can literally all of it and new ish. Great argument. Now, in these conversations, what if we allow the predecessor to evolve as well? Now, that would get interesting. This is the problem. The problem with people like Tank is he's bitter. He knows if Michael was living today, Michael won't pay him any mind. Why? Go look up what Tank says about a lot of things. I'm not even going to tell you because it's interesting in a bad way. Tank is not an expert in music. He might do music. He might sing R&B. But some people are stuck in a certain box. Tank is one of them. Michael dances are done worldwide. When you think of dancing, a lot of people will think of Michael Jackson. As a matter of fact, quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles, my football team, Jalen Hurts, played a game of word association. And they gave him the word dense. And the first person that came up to his mind, because in the part of the game is you, when someone gives you a word, you got to think of the first thing that comes up to your mind. The first person that came to his mind was, you guessed it, Michael Jackson. Not Chris Brown, not Neo, not Justin Timberlake, not Justin Bieber, not Omarion, not Usher, not even Elvis Presley. Michael Jackson. So what is Tank really talking about? We know that there's certain singers in this industry that want Chris Brown to be that dude. No, Chris Brown is not a better dancer than Michael Jackson. As a matter of fact, he's one of the, you know, he's a good dancer, but he's not a better dancer than Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson is a better dancer than Michael Jackson. Okay? Michael Jackson didn't steal anything. If anything, Chris Brown, Usher, Justin Timberlake, Omarion, Neo, Justin Bieber, they all stole in a way. They stole from Michael. Because remember way back in 2002 when Justin Timberlake was doing that MTV performance and he had the hat and he was dancing like Mike? Everybody was like, yo, why you dance like Frank Sinatra, but you dance a lot like Michael. What's going on? Now, why would he need to take Michael's little stick that he did for the Motel 25 and do his own thing? What you trying to pretend to be? Now, he had the nerve to say he was trying to dance like Frank Sinatra. But I don't remember Frank Sinatra dancing like that. I know Frank Sinatra wear fedora hats. I didn't know Frank Sinatra danced like that. Who is Justin Timberlake fooling? I love Justin Timberlake, by the way. I'm a Justin Timberlake fan. I'm also an Usher fan. And Usher danced like Michael. We remember when Usher went to go perform with Michael in the 30th anniversary special. And they were doing their thing. And that's the stuff that keeps going viral. Because it was the king showing his predecessor, this is how we're going to do it. As a way, when you really think about it, Michael gave him the torch, if you really think about it. And now Usher is going to do the Super Bowl performance. And he already said he's learning from Michael, Prince, and the people, and I believe he also said Beyonce, from the people who did it before. No way did he mention Chris Brown. As a matter of fact, nowhere did anyone who takes dance seriously mentions Chris Brown. You know why? Because Prince Brown's not that dude. He never will be that dude. Is he talented? Of course. But his music is not good at all. I mean, what's the last time I liked a Chris Brown song? New Flame from he did with Usher and Rick Ross. I think it's called New Flame. Okay. I like that song. That was the last song Chris Brown that I actually liked. I remember I was doing something with my sister, and she's a Chris Brown fan, so she was playing his music, and oh my goodness, it's horrible. The music he puts out there is terrible. I'm like, there are actually people out here actually think that Chris Brown is better than a whole Michael Jackson. So I think the real reason why people like Tank, by the way, Tank was at the Jackson Family compound for Halloween last year. I was shocked to see him there. Knowing he said this and feels this way about Michael, what was he doing there? So I think Tank and others think like this about Michael is because Michael's image is not the best. And this, when it comes to, you know, it's not the best. When you look at someone like Chris Brown speaks to a certain group of people that aren't the smartest people in the world. And Michael doesn't really speak to those people. They respect him, but Michael doesn't speak to those people like Chris Brown does. And so they figure, you know, I will only support someone that I can relate to. They can't relate to Michael. Michael was a child star. Michael was successful pretty much majority of his life. Michael had a completely different lifestyle than a lot of people. They can't relate. Whereas Michael came from a two-parent household. Chris Brown was raised by a single mother. A lot of them were. So they can't really relate. Michael is not a convicted felon, unfortunately, with Chris Brown, he is. And he became one at a young age. Like, a lot of people that look up to Chris Brown, some of them come from unfortunate circumstances. Chris Brown never really had a strong male figure in his life like Michael clearly did. And it shows in the way they do music, the way they conduct themselves. Chris Brown did not have to do that to Rihanna, right? Michael never put a hand on anybody. He was falsely accused of that. But he didn't put his hand on people. He didn't hurt anybody, okay? He's not capable. Chris Brown, unfortunately, because of what he did to Rihanna. It's a lot, and you know, people should, you know, even with that, and also how he handles stuff. Like, when he lost that Grammy to singer and musician Robert Glasper, he was like, who the F is he? Now, if you're in the entertainment business, you should know who he is. But see how disrespectful that was? But yet, he is going to be praised by these type of ilk that feel it's okay to disrespect a Michael Jackson and just to praise a person like Chris Brown. To be fair, Chris Brown was falsely accused of stuff, and it turned out to be false. So that's true. But other than that, it's so many things, you know. Michael is a well-rounded musician, whereas Chris Brown is not. Michael grew as an artist, whereas Chris Brown has not and will not, because he's not that type of artist. And that's not to say he's not a good artist or he is not capable of being a great artist. I don't think Chris Brown is trying to be better than he could be. I don't see how. He needs to be challenged in order to do that. And on top of that, his music, someone his age should not be making these type of songs anymore. It should be a little more mature. So, I don't know. I mean, I think that could be the reasons why, someone like Tank would say something crazy like this. But, you know, what do you expect from these people? So, I'm glad to see that, you know, there are people out there that are disagreeing with what this crazy man said. I want to say he's crazy. His comment is crazy. His crazy comment, they're disagreeing with what he's saying. And, you know, it's even sadder that it's his own people that does this. It's this replacement thing, not accepting this is one of your greats. This will never happen to Prince. Nobody will ever say, oh, Prince doesn't deserve, Prince needs to be questioned, all that. No one does that to him. And that's, again, image. It's why should the greatest of all time be this guy? Why could it be somebody else that we can relate to? But you can't relate to Prince either. Because like Michael is a musical genius and is a talented individual. Beyond talented individual. Who can grow as an artist unlike Chris Brown. Who was challenged unlike Chris Brown. Meaning challenged his art with, you know, people challenged him to do differently with his art. Like, unlike Chris Brown. So, and also, you know, Chris Brown sticks to R&B music, where Michael did R&B, did pop, did rock. He did different genres. Chris Brown didn't, doesn't, and won't. So it's a lot of factors. So hopefully I don't keep talking about this on my podcast regarding these people saying these outrageous things about Michael and his legacy. No one is doing Chris Brown moves. Everybody's doing MJ moves. MJ's moves are recognizable over the world. So they're going to get ready to do stuff for Thriller. Show me what people are doing stuff for Chris Brown when it comes to his work. No one. So that's it. So I'm going to end this episode here. I'm going to take some time off for personal reasons. I will come back hopefully very soon. You guys take care of yourselves. You guys, take care of yourselves. And I hope you guys have a great rest of the week and beyond. All right, bye.